sitting at my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. Succession.
Fairness.
Fair trial.
Privacy.
Right.
Work.
Peace.
Movement.
This is my mistake, and let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression. Expression.
Expression.
Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Focus.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solid.
Fill in the border. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm joined by my co-host, Gord Barnes. Welcome, Gord.
Welcome, everybody, to the program who's listening, whether you're listening here in Regina or over the internet around the world.
And we have a special guest with us today. We've got Brenda Dubois, who is a member of the Sisters in Spirit Planning Committee 2012. Welcome, Brenda.
Thank you for the invitation.
Good to have you here.
So, Jim, I thought we'd begin perhaps by giving Brenda a little opportunity to introduce yourself, and maybe if you could just talk a little bit about the work that's been going on in terms of the organization of the event on October 4th. But maybe would you like to start by sharing a bit of your connection to the vigil planning and what makes this so important to you?
It's important to me because I'm a mother and I'm a grandmother, and I care about a lot of the other girls that are in the city and need to as well increase more awareness, not only for our young girls but also our young men, that harm can happen to you at any place, any time. And I'm here on behalf of the Sisters in Spirit Gathering Planning Committee. So we're really pleased to be able to use the airwaves to get out information and continue to promote the feast and vigil that we're planning for October 4th. Personally, the thing that I bring to it, I believe, is being aware at a very young age that harm could happen to you, especially after my grandmother was murdered here in the city of Regina. So this, for me, not only touches that piece around the issue of murdered Aboriginal women, but also just going through some of the names on the list of missing Aboriginal women. Some of these ladies were friends of mine, hung out with them, partied mm-hmm. with them, and still think about them today and sort of have a sense of where families are coming from when you can't let this rest, in some cases, when your loved one has not been found and you don't know what's going on. And I guess the other piece, too, is realize that even though we may have and people really don't like getting into the issue of numbers and all that kind of stuff, but I guess the reality is we have people going missing from throughout Canada, and highest numbers are Aboriginal women. And I think we need to realize that right now and bring to light that there's a crisis going on in Canada. And we need to alert other people. We need to alert especially young women and young men in this community and throughout Canada. Their lives are at risk. Going out at night to visit a friend, you may not return home, because that's the reality. Good kids go missing too. Mm-hmm. This just isn't about a marginalized population, even though they're the highest risk of going missing.
I'm just wondering, Brendan, we talk about the numbers. I'm just wondering if there's a problem now with keeping track, because as I think it's my understanding that some funding was lost for the organization that was actually keeping track of the numbers. Can you speak to that?
With the Native Women's Association through Canada?
Right.
I think a Native Women's Association through Canada is one of many associations that's going to be placed in a crisis of really trying to maintain certain standards of practices, such as even just keeping track of some of the missing and murdered. When this has been becoming an issue throughout Canada, why at this time is some of the needs for this to maintain it being pulled back? So it sort of doesn't jive in regards to what public politicians are saying and what's actually coming out in investments. And to me, these are investments.
Right.
It's about continuing to increase awareness, but also tracking the fact that people are going missing. And loved ones don't give up. 17 years later, people are still concerned and count those absences and are still going out to search 17 years later.
I don't know how you could possibly forget.
You can't.
Yeah.
You can't. And a friend of mine wrote a poem years ago, and he said the hardest part about forgetting is the remembering to forget that remembering brings back.
Mm-hmm.
And that was John Trudell,
wow,
who wrote that many years ago after a great tragedy that he had in his life. You may try and forget, but you'll remember. You remember the rest of your life. And
right,
that's a part of it. We want to remember.
Right, indeed.
They were important people
to
us. They had meaning, and they left children and grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. In order for your life to go on, of course, you can't think about it day and night, night and day, but it always comes back.
You have moments the rest of your life, and we call them moments that open up grief or moments that open up great smiles to your face in regards to great memories of that individual. Yep.
One of the things that, you know, Brenda, you and I have connected a number of times over the years at different vigils and some of the walks. I'm sure I haven't had the level of activity and contribution to this work that you have, but one of the things that strikes me about this in our own community here in Regina, and I expect it's the case in others, is that we're still such a divided community in terms of who we know, who we talk to, and it's, you know, divisions based on race, and it's not a healthy thing in our community, and I really think it's reflected in the reports about missing and murdered Aboriginal women and First Nations women across Canada. The Native Women's Association of Canada and Amnesty has released that really what is going on is fundamentally racist and sexist attacks on Indigenous women, and that's what, you know, quite honestly troubles me, is that the foundation of the attacks are fundamentally, as I said, racist and sexist, and you know, the divisions in our own community are really, really quite troubling. You know, I've through the Human Rights Radio program had conversations with people about the need to talk to each other about really important things like treaties and our history here in Saskatchewan and the rest of Canada. But I don't know if you want to sort of reflect yourself on some of that in terms of what I was just saying, in terms of your own experience and whether, I guess, through this last few years since the first release of the Stolen Sisters Report in 2004, you know, do you think there's been some improvement, some increased awareness of the concerns that we're trying to raise working together?
I believe that people are aware, but I also, to some degree, think there's a difference between being really aware and being conscious and how you incorporate that into your life. and doing safety planning with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going? What are you doing? It's not just about keeping track of them. It's about real safety.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about really how we get that next message on to a new generation. Working together as a collective,
mm-hmm.
We're always going to have issues.
Mm-hmm.
We're still going through a big residential school healing thing, you know, that we're dealing with as well, that's still on our plate as well. And we're dealing with it not only looking back, but looking forward. What is the new generation outcome going to be? And I always believe in the long run that we're all one part of a human race. However, we need to understand diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And even in First Nations country, you need to understand we have diversity too. Any culture has diversity. When you get people in a room and you share commonality around this type of feeling,
mm-hmm.
and even in regards to just the feast and the vigil, it's about everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking, yes, we can talk about race and be race specific.
Mm-hmm.
The highest number of women that get harmed are Aboriginal women. That's mm-hmm. a reality. Why? What for? How come?
Mm-hmm.
Great questions to ask and great questions to facilitate dialogue on. Why are, and don't mind me, why are not other women of other races at risk? I don't know. Good
mm-hmm.
questions to ponder on.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the harsh reality is Indian women are the highest risk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not that we're trying to be number one. Hey, man, we didn't ask for this.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't ask to be number one in regards to highest risk. And we don't wish it on any other race.
Mm-hmm.
We just want it to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it, I think, is how we're raising the next generation of children.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to commend some of the stuff Amnesty is doing and just trying to raise that consciousness level of another generation of children in regards to social justice issues. And you see that voice coming out in a new generation of kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're the Y generation.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Why is
yeah.
this happening?
Right.
And there are sure a lot of topics for them to ask about.
Yeah, and they're entitled. Because
yeah.
it's their world we're creating. We are. And they need to hold us accountable. And we need to be conscious of that. What kind of world are we creating for a next generation of young Aboriginal women?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do they have to look forward to? And do they need to realize that they, when they leave their homes, are high risk? Yeah.
You know, I reflect back to the October 2004 release of the original report, and
mm-hmm.
you know, even though personally I'd been involved in human rights work as a member and activist within Amnesty International for many, many years prior to that, I had no comprehension about what might be in the report when it was released,
yeah.
first of all, or the scale of it in terms of the concerns across right across Canada. And, you know, there were some public forums that happened quite quickly mm-hmm. after
mm-hmm.
the release of the report. And I was just incredibly moved by the emotions that, and the, first of all, the emotions that brought out in terms of everybody in attendance. But also, you know, I recall very, very quickly what happened was, family members were coming to those public discussions about the report, and this was just staggering to me, and saying, how come my mother's name or my sister's name or my daughter's name isn't listed in that list, in the report?
Yeah.
And, you know, it then demonstrated what a considerable amount of work that we all have to do
yeah.
to create safety in our communities and continue this work. And, you know, I think there were some pretty basic things that the Native Women's Association of Canada and Amnesty International and others at the time were calling for. And basically, one of the things was that it has to be a comprehensive strategy to end this violence against First Nations women. It can't be sort of piecemeal stuff, but it's got to be taken seriously and it's got to be addressed by things across the piece in terms of at the community level, but also within the justice system, within policing, and also more generally in terms of addressing some of the things that this is reflected in the original report that were in some of the National Inquiry and others. So you know, reflecting back on that and then looking at where we are now, we've still got a lot of work to do. I don't know that we've made very much progress yet, but at least we're creating the awareness. And when I'm out in many public events now, people are, like, the whole theme around the Stolen Sisters work or the Sisters in Spirit is something I think people are, generally speaking, become more aware of, which is a good thing. But as you say, we've got a lot of work to do.
I was there the day that the report was released here in Regina. And the harsh part about it is it was alarming. And I don't know if people need to realize as well that every time a lot of this stuff happens, it reawakens us, but it also re-traumatizes us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've been numb for a generation of years. Now we got to feel again.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. another issue?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this one is important. And mm-hmm. this one, whether you like it or not, you go to a numb place, but you still stand up to deal with it. That's the hard part. And that's why a lot of families, after the report was really stood up and said, you forgot my sister, you mm-hmm. forgot my mother, you forgot my grandmother. And that helped continue to add to the statistics, because that then really looked at the numbers, not only here in Saskatchewan, but throughout Canada. You know, but I really have to commend our sisters on the coast.
Mm-hmm.
I have to commend Gladys, and I have to commend Bernie for a lot of the work that they did. The Walk for Justice, besides the Sisters in Spirit stuff that happened, okay,
right.
the
right.
momentum
right.
that was as a response to that, to stand up and have a walk happen from BC to Ottawa. And not just once, they just did it again, what was it, last year they did it again, to remind people we are not going to be silent. This has to, and then bringing international attention to it as well. Right. So you have to see, sort of since the release of the Sisters in Spirit report, how it's motivated and mobilized even us as Aboriginal women. Not only Aboriginal, but to connect. Because remember, we hosted them here in the city.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just Aboriginal people in that room. There was people of all different races in that room coming to show their solidarity to this issue, besides supporting the people that were walking.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew as well, when the walk went across Canada, the education was going to be continuing. And if you pull up the Native Women's Association of Canada webpage, you'll see some of the outcomes that happened and some of the investments that were made in regards to trying to have an impact, even just in regards to education. How do you deal? There's a toolkit that was made to help families deal with what do you do if your child is missing? What do you do if your child has not only got missing but possibly murdered as well? So there's some assets that came out of at least being able to bring light to this situation. And it wouldn't have happened, I don't think, if Amnesty International would have actually said, hey, guys, wake up. This is a very important crisis that's going on. And you may want to timeline it, because I may be wrong. I don't know if the situation in Vancouver and the charges and all that stuff around the pig farm or whatever
yeah.
his name is, and the charges, and still yet now the finishing of that inquiry and the families not feeling really being heard and responded to through that inquiry even then, and that there's faults in our systems. Part of it is that piece. And So I think, just in answer, trying to answer that yeah. question about since the release of the report,
right.
the progression of the mobilization and still the response, and you have to realize that Sisters in Spirit gatherings go on throughout Canada. Even though we're hosting one here in Regina, our sisters in Saskatoon are actually hosting another one at the same time. Winnipeg, Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, this is not silent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, silence is another form of violence, and this issue is not going to be silent. We are now not only not wanting to forget the ones that are missing and murdered, we are wanting to create alarm for a new generation of kids that you need to be concerned about when you go out at night.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, too, that this goes on. The problem has not been solved.
It hasn't, with the recent one, and if you don't mind if I can say her name, with Brandi Wiesequate actually missing since January 1st last year, and it's coming up this year. She's still missing. Who's looking for her?
Mm.
Who knows where she is and what happened to her would be my bigger question, because somebody out there knows. Mm-hmm. I just pray they have conscience.
Yeah.
You know, we raised their children right. They know when they're doing right and wrong. So whoever did this, I hope they reawaken their conscience and deal with this. Break their own silence.
And you know, you mentioned Brandy's name, and there have been other names of women who are still missing in Regina. I think of, for example, Danita Big Eagle, who there's been no resolution for her family, for her mom, Diane, who has spent enormous amount of energy, and it's been so difficult for her.
And her own resources.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, some parents don't give up. If she's hearing her daughter's gone missing in the southeast end of the city, she got people out and she'll go look.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel for her. You know, I couldn't imagine what she's going through on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And she's raising her grandchildren, too.
Yeah.
You know, so that dilemma of a family who's actually dealing with someone who's missing is a different life than what we're leading.
Yeah.
We can empathize and feel for them and show our solidarity by showing up at the feast and vigil to let them know we have at least an inkling of a clue of what they're waking up to every day. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, the circumstances are now a little different, but with respect to thinking of as well about Melanie Geddes' family, because whereas there's no news with respect to Diane Big Eagle, Melanie Geddes went missing. Her remains were found later north of the city in the valley.
Yes, they were.
But there's been no charges ever against anyone relative to that crime, and you know that's another example where you sort of wonder, when will this end? And I know personally, if we could have one vigil this year and get back together again the following year, and there were no new names to add to the list, that would be fabulous for me.
Yeah, so go ahead, Brenda. I totally agree with you, because as I was going through the list of the missing and murdered in Saskatchewan, I actually started adding some names, not thinking that I needed to, but same thought went through my head. I'm hoping I'm not adding any more names to this next year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to. And that's that whole public consciousness we need to get out there, that this has to stop.
Mm-hmm.
This has to stop. I want to say another name, because she's been missing for a long, long time, and that's Patsy Favel. And it's very interesting, because her mother just passed within the past couple of weeks. And I was reading the obituary, and what I noticed is survived by, and they're still named Patsy.
Wow.
So you can get the mindset of people in our community that even though she's missing, she's still counted as someone that's missing their mother who's already gone on to that other world. And she's been missing a long time from our community as well. And the hard part, too, is just to remember what happened to Pamela George.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happened to Pamela George. And the consciousness of that piece still needs to hit people. That whether you're a good girl going out or a girl that has no choice but to do what you have to do, that great harm can happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
How are we doing for time, Jim? Are we getting close to the break here?
Oh, we've got another minute or so.
Okay.
I
guess maybe just before the break, do you want to just give the basics about where the vigil will be held and the nature of the event, Brenda, and then we'll get into that a little bit more after.
Sure. Just to tell people that the Sisters in Spirit Gathering Feast and Vigil is on October 4th, which is Thursday, and it's going to be hosted at the First Nations University of Canada. We start at 4 o'clock with a pipe ceremony and a community feast, and we'll talk a little bit more of that after break. And at 7 o'clock, we're starting with the speakers and a candlelight vigil, and we'll give more details into that later, because we have an actual agenda planned out for that entire evening. And I sort of wanted to go back to that piece, that if people don't know what a community feast is, you know, where do you call, how do you get that kind of information?
Great.
It's about letting people know, you know, and this is the reality, too, and I was reminding Brian earlier that we've signed on not just for this feast and vigil, but once you do a feast, we're signed on now for the next 4 years. We at least know what we in Regina are doing over the next 4 years in regards to the Sisters in Spirit Gathering.
Great. Thanks, Brenda.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I'll go to break, and we've got some Buffy St. Marie after. Buffy St. Marie, Darling, Don't Cry. I was just watching the video, and looks like it's in the Coppell Valley where they did it.
Great.
Yeah.
Good good choice, Jim.
Great music.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're back having a conversation with Brenda Dubois, and Brenda's a member of the Sisters in Spirit Feast and Vigil Planning Committee. Welcome back to the program, Brenda.
Thank you.
And thank you for being with us on Human Rights Radio here in Regina and sharing your understanding and knowledge with everybody through this program. Just before the break, we were talking about the event that's going to be held here in Regina on October 4th, and I wonder if you'd like to give us a little bit more details in terms of, again, where it is and the time and some of the other things about what's happening at the event.
Okay. Thank you very much. We really appreciate the opportunity to get the message out through the airwaves. If we had smoke signals, I don't know where we'd be today. We are going to be hosting the Sisters in Spirit Gathering Feast and Vigil October 4th, which is Thursday evening, at the First Nations University of Canada. We are hoping to start the pipe ceremony and community feast by 4 o'clock. And what we need to remind people is that when you're coming to a feast, especially women, we want to ensure that you follow proper protocol by wearing skirts. And if you're requiring more information, I'll refer to the webs, our Facebook. We actually have a Facebook, Sisters in Spirit Gathering Feast and Vigil. For more details, feel free to go to the Facebook page. And then after the feast, we'll probably just spend a little bit of time cleaning up a bit and getting ready for the vigil. The vigil, we hope to start by 7 o'clock. That's why we're sort of doing the events one at 4 and one at 7, just sort of trying to give people the opportunity. If you can only make it to the feast, come out to the feast. If you can only make it to the vigil, come out to the vigil. So at 7 o'clock, we hope to start the vigil. We were gracious enough to get the drum group, Rainwater Singers, and they are a drum group of women in the community, mentored by Betty McKenna. And they're going to be coming out and actually starting us off with a drum song. There'll be a joint statement read, I believe, by Alicia, who's with the Women's Center.
Yeah. Great.
As well at that time. There'll be some dignitaries probably in the audience that we may take time to recognize, but that night is not about dignitaries. Mm. The dignitaries are the people who are missing and murdered. Mm. Really, you may as well say. We're just honored to be able to gather to remember them and make sure that people don't forget. The Chief of Police will talk, Amnesty International as well, the Student Association, and some of these people are actually our sponsors. If you don't mind, I'd just like to take a moment just to thank some of our sponsors. We actually have the First Nations University of Canada Students Association. We have the Women's Centre through the University of Regina, of course Amnesty International, and the Regina Police Service. We have to thank them. They're actually coming out and setting up their teepee so that when we do host the pipe ceremony, I believe that's where it's going to be held. And as well, I think there's going to be a sacred fire set up in there as well if people are wanting to come and make some offerings. As well, because we're using First Nations University of Canada site, they are also one of our sponsors as well, and we really commend them for being able to give us access to that space. We were wanting to hold it in the North Central community. However, at times I feel that by hosting it in one area all the time, we may stigmatize a part of the city. Maybe we should have held it in the South, East, North End, just to really bring that conscious level that this just doesn't happen in North Central. Mm-hmm. Anybody in this city can be affected by this issue. So, as well, we have a young woman who will be taking some time to join us. Her name is Candy Fox, and she'll be reading a poem called Indian Woman. We'll actually ask some family as well, relatives of the ones that are missing, to come and share a message as well in regards to their loved one who is missing. We are at that time going to be taking a moment to start handing out candles and making sure that they're ready to go. We have a number of youth in the community that have actually stood up to accept responsibility, to name each individual at a certain point that is missing or murdered. We hope by integrating the youth in what we're doing that is empowering that next generation as well to get out there and spread the message and mentor other youth about safety practices. We as well will have a moment of silence. Myself and Shellen Kay will be doing a message of hope to the families, partly because I think it's twofold. Their spirit of not giving up really mentors us in understanding hope is always there and it always lingers on. It's that feeling that we know the sun's going to rise tomorrow and, you know, you hope that change is going to happen. We are going to close off again with the Rainwater Singers, and they'll be singing the Strong Women song. And we hope people, our sponsors and everybody else, will stick back, and we're going to be having cake and hot chocolate, where we pray that we have a really good evening, that we do it under the guidance of Grandmother Moon, because I believe she'll be beaming for us that evening. And then, of course, always being conscious of cleaning up after yourself. That people come out, please feel free, help us clean up. You know, it's about togetherness and making sure that we leave Funuk the way we found it.
Well, thank you for running through all the details, Brenda. And I, you know, as you're going through this, I wanted just to mention that I am so impressed by the the leadership that one particular person has provided to the organizing committee, Jacqueline Anaquan. Yes. She is an amazing young woman who has come to the table, really, if I can put it that way, by bringing together friends and many other people that we haven't connected with each other previously, and just been amazing in terms of the way she's held the meetings and the leadership she's been providing. And I want to recognize her contribution along with everybody else.
Thank you.
The other thing, I recall, I want to just mention that, because we did put the link as well to the Facebook group on the AmnestySaskatchewan.ca site, so you can find it there quite easily. Just to mention as well that we're trying to encourage people to bring their own plate and knife and fork.
Yes, actually, for the community feast, we're trying our best not to use recycled products. Traditionally, when you went to a feast, you brought your own feast bundle, which would entail something to eat soup in, something to have berries in, something to drink something from, and utensils, basically. And that's that piece. You bring it, you're taking it home with you as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really about being conscious of that piece of how much we recycle too much stuff, or else it just ends up in the garbage if it's not recycled.
Right.
But what I want to get back to, and thank you for reminding me, I want to commend Jackie for being the lead organizer of the Sisters in Spirit Gathering Feast and Vigil. It is that new, vibrant energy that I talked about that's coming forward and saying, I can do this. And if you remember, Gord, all it takes is one.
Mm-hmm.
To stand
mm-hmm.
up and say, I will do this, and everybody else just says, okay, what do you need?
Yeah.
And that's that piece. If you still want to figure out how to help, go to the webpage. It will give you some ideas. There's a specific person that's actually in charge of collecting the information for food for the feast. So if you are interested in making any donations for the feast, please go to the webpage. I believe her name is Tara. There's a link to her so that you can at least register that we know you're willing to donate something for the feast. And she'll tell you exactly what's acceptable for a feast. Please, KFC is not acceptable.
Right.
It is, and it's a bit sort of a joke in some ways. But I really want to thank Jackie for stepping up and still understanding now that it's not only a one-year commitment, that it is a four-year commitment. But Jackie wanted me to remind people about one thing as well. And it is about, one, not only a new generation understanding tradition and protocols, but it was about a new generation understanding the need for safety planning.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that even though, and you know, I used to do this with my daughter, and it is really cool, you know, she's going someplace. She'd phone home, actually, even though I knew the walk was 10 minutes. But me as a parent, understanding what happened to my grandmother, understood why I needed to do that. My daughter, after a while, didn't understand why she needed to do that. She wants a life. She wants you to trust her.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not about trust. We trust our children.
Mm-hmm.
We don't trust other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how we get that message out to a new generation. We trust them.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't trust the intent of other people to have their same best interest in mind as we do.
Right.
And that's the hard part. And Jackie wanted me to remind people about that piece. It's not just about this, it's about a new generation of kids. And if bringing them to the vigil that night helps you go home and have a conversation with your children about the importance of safety planning, bring your children out.
Mm-hmm.
It is about trying to ensure no one goes missing and we have no one else added to this list next year. Can we measure up and can we meet that mark? You know?
And I think that's going to be one of the remarkable features of the changed format for the Regina Vigil, because as you know, we've had it in Victoria Park in the center of the city almost every year,
yes,
with the exception of one event that we held at the CBC.
Yeah.
And certainly the Victoria Park vigils worked out really well, but I think by having it as a community gathering at the First Nations University, there's going to be a lot more opportunity to have the kind of conversations that you've just gone through, Brenda, that we all need to share with each other. And I'm glad it's being held there. I've said on the program before that we're so fortunate to have the, you know, First Nations University of Canada here in Regina, and it's becoming a real focal point for so many gatherings. So I'm glad the decision was made to change the format, and I'm hoping it will, the new format will make a contribution, just in terms of the change in awareness in the community.
Yep, and it's interesting because you have two opportunities. You have an opportunity during the feast to sit down and partake in sharing of a meal, but also to be able to talk to one another. You know, and that's that piece. Using that time to talk to the person next to you rather than just within the confines of the people that you've come with. And remembering that we're all hosts or hostesses in that respect in coming to this event. And trying our best to be cordial, to be respectful, and understand that there's a sense of not only caring, concern, but also solemnness in regards to a little bit of sadness mixed with a little bit of anger going, well, why is this happening? And where are these girls? And why are men going missing as well? And really being able to raise that consciousness. Because, you know, we can only do so much with politicians. In the end, it's about common man. Who's taking these girls? Is it one? Is it two? Yeah. Are people even having those conversations?
Yeah.
We had an incident here in the community where a guy tried to pull a girl over and almost harmed her. You know, and so how does a man feel so comfortable in daylight going out to think that it's okay to try and grab someone?
Yeah.
Where is this coming from?
Yeah.
You know, and if there are people who are not well, then family need to bring that to somebody's attention.
Yeah.
And I don't know, but I think sometimes we need to go back to the common man or the common person level and start having conversations in our homes and figure out, did I raise my child right? Is my child doing this? Like, I never let my kids off the hook in some cases and held them accountable for as much as I could in regards to what they did. But, you know, how are we having common conversations in our houses about who is it? Is it possible to think about somebody harming and doing this kind of stuff to women? Who harmed Brandy would be my biggest question.
Yeah.
Was it whose son was that?
Yeah.
Or whose sons was it?
Yeah.
And being able to have those conscious conversations at our common tables. And understanding that we all have to accept responsibility for this. Because little do we know how close to home it might be.
Yeah.
Because we know in a majority of cases, a lot of these, when you look at some of the statistics in regards to women being murdered, it wasn't necessarily in most cases done by a stranger.
Yeah.
The ones who are murdered are done by someone they know. The ones that are gone missing, I believe those are stranger-based, you know?
And, you know, when we reflect on in terms of Regina, and we know that there are women who are missing, and in, you know, in some cases, women we know who have been murdered, but there's no resolution. What that means is there's still somebody out there, and it could be one person, as you mentioned earlier, or it could be more than one person. But reflecting on the experience in other communities, including Saskatoon, but also more obviously in Vancouver, and now with the news with respect to Highway of Tears, it's often been somebody who's responsible for more than one crime. And I think that, you know, that what is what we really need to think about is right now here in Regina, we have unsolved cases.
Yeah.
And it could be that there's still somebody here in our community that is, you know, putting people at, you know, that whole situation is putting people, women at risk. And that's why we just cannot let this drop. We have to focus around it. And
I agree with you.
I'm glad you...
I totally agree with you, because for me, I give this thought, a lot of thought. Because for me, for years, I've been wondering, who's the serial killer? And recently as well, there was a gentleman charged in Manitoba. I believe his last name is Lamb.
Yeah.
And I believe a family from here actually is asking the police to go back and do more research to find out, is he only speaking for some? And he actually started this a number of years ago, because there's been family members missing that they want to figure out, did he harm them?
Yeah.
And that is the harsh reality, is that one person potentially could be responsible and has been getting away with this for a long time and really doesn't care and gets some real sicko excitement out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even want to speak to... every time I think about Melanie, I sort of have to go to my numb place because I can't imagine the kind of pain and terror that young lady had to go through and before that gentleman took her life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can only, you don't want to dwell in that spot for very long because it's quite painful.
And you know, there's another name that we haven't mentioned yet on the program, and I think it would be important to, because it's a name that is so much of a concern so many people in the community, and that's Tamara Keepness.
You know? When you have these the little angels, as some people are calling the tiny ones, Tamara's been missing for a number of years, I think it's 7 years, eight mm-hmm. years. You know, but the harsh reality when I was going through the webpage from the Saskatchewan Association of Police Chiefs, I wasn't aware that a young boy had gone missing from Saskatoon recently as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where was I? How come that wasn't polarized? Are we not bringing sensationalism to it because we think, oh, that's normal? Well, sorry, don't normalize this issue. It's not normal for a kid to go missing.
Yeah.
And that's the harsh reality. I think that's why for years people have held a... Barbecue in the Park and Tamara's name. I'm still hoping that they'll actually name that little park after her.
Mm.
So that her name will always be right on 11th Avenue just to, and as a way to not forget, mm-hmm. but as a way for parents to be able to go and talk to their children about safety and public safety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this little girl went missing right from her own house. Well, how did that happen? You know, those questions are still out there and will always be out there. I can imagine the pain of her brothers and sisters that will never have an answer about what happened and will continue to deal with this pain for the rest of their life because they're the ones that have to mark that absence in regards to having memories, in regards to having birthdays that they can't celebrate anymore. It's like I remember someone would have been 30-some-odd years old over this past year had this child not been murdered.
Mm.
We think some of this stuff that's going on in our community in regards to infanticide, and I may be saying the word wrong, but as children being murdered or babies being murdered, it's been going on for a long time. You know, and I know I'm moving away to another topic, but this whole piece that we're trying to go back to in the feast and the vigil that we're hosting this Thursday is we're talking about a lot of women that are going missing.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a normal, okay situation, whether it be here in Regina, Saskatoon, or PA. How dare we not mark the absence of someone? And that's the reason why we get together on October 4th throughout Canada to say we will not forget. We will remember you for the rest of our lives. And you know what? Some of these people will be remembered beyond even us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we want. That's why if they were to name that park, Tamara Keepness Park, not only would her life be memorialized, but there'd be a place for people to go to just do education for another generation of children. Safety is always going to be a common concern for everybody.
Thank you. I think that's a wonderful idea, you know, the naming of the park, by the way. It's something that people should maybe get together and promote a bit. And Brenda, thank you so much for being on the program today and sharing about the vigil itself and the feast. And we encourage everybody in the community to participate. Hopefully, as I say, we can maybe both be on the program next year and be able to celebrate that there's been no more situations where family have lost mothers, sisters, and daughters.
Yep. And I'd like to thank Amnesty International for inviting us to the show. We really appreciate the time. And I'd really, again, like to thank Jackie for standing up for all the work that she's doing, because I don't think people realize the sort of pressure that's on the lead organizer, the worries and the stress that she has to go through. But what we keep on telling her in the long run, I don't know if it helps, is that everything will work out as it's intended to, and we continue to pray for that. So thank you again.
Thanks, Brenda.
I just like to clarify one thing. The vigil itself, where is that being held?
It's at First Nations University of Canada, okay. October 4th, starting at 4 o'clock with the Pipes Ceremony and Feast, and then the speakers in the candlelight vigil at 7 o'clock. So people are invited to either one of the events. Thank you very much.
Because I was just looking at some stuff on the computer here, and it said Victoria Park. So
No, that was last. We usually held it at Victoria Park, but some of our lead organizers have moved out of the city, and somebody else like Jackie has stood up and said, we'll do it, and Fanuc at least was able to give us the space. When it comes down to this, we're doing this with very minimal money. It's with people's true intent, and that's the piece in reminding Jackie. Everything will work out as it's intended to.
Great. Okay. So it's at the university.
So we're going to just conclude the program by inviting Brian, who's here, and we're going to ask him to share information about an upcoming conference and film festival. So welcome to the program, Brian. And
well, thank you so much, Gord. Amnesty International is holding a Get Active with Amnesty 2012 event. It's actually two events that we're doing. The first one is the Amnesty International Film Festival. So that's going to run in October 9th to 12th, where we're showcasing films both during lunch and evening films. The lunch hour films will normally be at 12 o'clock, and they will be at the Saskatchewan Film Pool Conservative, and the evening films will also be in the different locations. They will be in the Cathedral Neighborhood Center, Saskatchewan Film Pool Cooperative, and the University of Regina. For more details on this, we could go to the website getactivewithamnesty2012.wordpress.com/film-festival. Okay, and the second event will actually be on October 13th. That will be the Amnesty International Saskatchewan Regional Conference, and that will be held in the Luther College, where we'll be showcasing a number of workshops, presentations, and a keynote presentation by our Amnesty International Canada President, Sarah Beamish. And in the evening, we'll also have a musical activism, and that will be done at the Artful Dodger at 6 p.m. Yeah. Right. And for more details on that, just look at the website, getactivewithamnesty2012.wordpress.com/conference. Thank you.
Just about all the time we've got. As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJATR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."